This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Accelerate your day with today's business headlines with Volvo Cars.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Joyce Goh and Melissa Idris. The morning run continues. It's just 48 minutes after 7 in the morning. It is the 3rd of May. We're going into the major business stories of the day. We're going to start with some breaking news. The world's fourth largest smartphone maker that's been looking to list has chosen Hong Kong. That's Xiaomi. This listing will be the world's biggest IPO since 2014. The big question is, why Hong Kong?
Well, it looks like basically this gives early vindication for Hong Kong securities regulator and exchange operator, because recently, remember, they've pushed through some pretty big reforms there. And it looks like news of Xiaomi looking to list, I mean, it's been in the market for some time, but we didn't know where would they list. All eyes were like, where? And it looks like they've picked Hong Kong.
Well, one of the reforms that they put through has been this dual class share system. And it's something that exchanges around the world have been looking at. We have exchanges everywhere from the US, Canada, France, Italy, Sweden, Denmark, Switzerland. All these exchanges allow for dual class shares. Hong Kong was one of the exchanges within the region that was looking at it. I know Singapore was looking at it. London as well, looking to introduce this structure. Malaysia also, if I'm not mistaken, Bursa Malaysia was also weighing in this structure. I don't think there's been any updates on that front. But recently we saw Hong Kong taking that leap, and I think it is in a sense trying to attract the tech titans that would have otherwise listed in, say, the US, because it allows this structure. So clearly this is one way they've attracted such a huge name to list in Hong Kong. So yeah, you're right, Joyce, early vindication.
Well, so the question, because for those who are, you know, are novices to what happens in stock markets, a dual share structure will keep essentially control in the hands of founders. I mean, that's the thing, that's the attractive proposition within the dual share structure.
Yeah, so essentially you've got the founders and the founders of the company, the top level management, having a different type of structure. So for instance, if you have, say, Mark Zuckerberg on Facebook, he holds less than 1% of the publicly traded stock in Facebook, but 60% of the voting rights. That's how they were able to buy WhatsApp for, what was that, $22 billion at that point in time, with very little shareholder or board input. So essentially these are, you know, the types, for instance, with the kind of tech giants, they have all these kind of the founders right at the top trying to make decisions for the company, which they say they know best for the company, and shareholders then may not see for the long term, according to some of the founders. So these dual class shares are used for that.
Yeah, well, recently, I think Hong Kong was overtaken by Shanghai last year for the first time in the global IPO stakes. So it looks like Hong Kong was, you know, they're anxious to reclaim back their stake at the number one position.
It's about competitiveness, yeah. Right? How do you make sure that your exchange remains competitive within this region?
And yeah.
This is one of the structures that Hong Kong is looking at.
And they lost Alibaba's listing to New York. I think Alibaba listed in 2014, $25 billion, and they chose New York as that. And if you look at the top 15 biggest global IPOs of all time, it's a mix of between New York, Hong Kong, Tokyo, and you have Shanghai, London as well.
Well, I'm actually excited to see what this Xiaomi IPO will look like, because, you know, when this comes to pass, we could see another huge Chinese tech company. Mm. And this is after Alibaba, after Tencent. I think at about $10 billion, this IPO is going to be massive, one that will be benchmark against a lot of other companies.
Right, but I guess the size of IPOs are one thing, but the question is also the company, whether it really whets the appetite of that particular market, right? I mean, just looking at Xiaomi itself in 2017, sales jumped by two-thirds to 114.6 billion yuan, while operating profit tripled and adjusted net profit soared from a year earlier. So all things considered, it seems to be an exciting proposition for investors.
Did you know that the founder of Xiaomi actually said that greed is not good at Xiaomi, and they actually capped the profit margin on its hardware business at a 5%?
Wow, I don't know how investors would feel about that, but probably that's why they like the dual class share system, so that perhaps, you know, there's a different type of category of shares from the top management versus, say, other shareholders.
Okay, coming back from Hong Kong to our shores, also another IPO upcoming. QSR Brands Holding plans to raise some 2 billion ringgit from its upcoming IPO. QSR's majority shareholder, Johor Corporation Group, says the listing will be done no later than November this year. JCorp President and CEO, Dato' Kamaruzzaman Abdul Kassim, expects QSR to have an estimated market cap value of some 6 billion ringgit upon listing. Well, we'll come back with a clip of Dato' Kamaruzzaman explaining the outlook for QSR.
Well, essentially, QSR operates KFC and Pizza Hut for Malaysia and the ASEAN region. They also have, if I'm not mistaken, they're also looking to list their upstream business, which is, you know, the poultry side, the chicken and eggs, essentially what makes for KFC. But this is quite interesting because they had left the stock market before, so they privatized, and now they're looking to come back.
That's right. They delisted in 2013. At that time, JCorp, together with EPF and CVC, that's a private equity company, took KFC Holdings, Malaysia Berhad, and its parent QSR Brands Berhad private. And, you know, it looks like, if you count, right, 2013 up to now, 2018, that's about 5 years. It's about time, if you're a PE firm, to look at exiting. So maybe this IPO would give them a chance to exit. And it'll be interesting to see how much are they going to list it for, and what assets are they listing.
Okay, so about 2 billion ringgit they're expecting to raise from this listing. I really think this is interesting simply because KFC in Malaysia, I have to say, is quite popular, right?
Yeah, it is.
I don't know anyone who, it's one of the more popular fast food outlets, and they've really kind of gotten their rural area penetration quite right. So maybe the other fast food outlets may not have the same level of penetration that KFC and Pizza Hut have. So whether or not this will be successful the second time around, maybe for QSR?
Yeah, and the thing is, this whole relisting has been in the market for some time now, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was delayed a bit because there was news of this Thai investor coming in, remember? He is a Thai beverage PCL.
Can I attempt his name?
Yeah, okay.
Sharon Srivadana Bhakti.
Wow, very good.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, so Thai Beverage is controlled by him. He's Thailand's third richest man. And, they were reported to be keen to acquire EPF's and CVC's combined 49% stake in QSR. But up until now, I think there's nothing, because I think Thai Beverage acquired a third of KFC outlets in Thailand. Mm. This was in August 2017. I think that got everyone talking about, if he acquired in Thailand, will he look into this region? And there was news that he was looking. But now, with the news of the relisting happening this year, looks like that might not be happening anymore with the Thai investor.
What do we have a sense of the appetite of the market? I mean, what is it that it finds tasty and yummy? I mean, quite apart from what we do, you know, I mean, you know, if we looked at the two listings, I mean, Jeff Howie from Singapore mentioned the two listings in April for Singapore, how much buzz it created there. Is this a kind of listing that's likely to create a buzz? I mean, is, you know, something in the F&B space really something that investors and traders are interested in?
Well, it gives investors a chance to invest into the retail F&B space and KFC. It was in the market as already, it's just that they took it private. I think we should check at how that they did, you know, previously. But looking at the number of listings that Bursa Malaysia has had this year, the list is still quite short. 1, 2, 3, 4. And if you look at the IPO performance of new listings, if you look at the data there, more than half of what they have on this list, there are about 15 here, are not they're in negative territory.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so also you have to see whether or not investors, there's the whole climate for IPOs, which and is, whether investors are taking to that particular stock.
Which is why I think sometimes you hear of companies who say they want to go for listing, which is sometimes delayed, maybe it's not the right time. They really have to get the timing right to kind of gauge, as you said, the appetite for fried chicken. But now I think they're seeing that that it will, they've said that it will happen no later than November. So clearly they're seeing something in the market that is whetting the appetite of investors.
Yeah. Actually, it's not for chicken, it's for chicken stock.
But chicken.
Well, if you look at the number of listed companies on Bursa, it has fallen. If you check on Bursa Malaysia's website, for 2018, there are about 879 companies listed. Compare that to 2013, that was 911 companies listed. So that has fallen somewhat. And whether that will pick up again, and why are companies not listing in Bursa, is also a question to explore.
Okay, let's move on to the East Coast Rail Link, or ECRL, project, which is, as they announced, holding a recruitment drive in Bentong, Pahang, in line with its commitment to employ some 70% Malaysian workforce. So basically, they want 70% of their workforce to be Malaysian in the construction of the high-impact rail infrastructure. Because this has been the subject of quite a bit of political debate, and we saw it in the on the front pages of our newspapers this morning as well.
Yeah, well, in April, we had the owners of the East Coast Rail Link pushing back against these allegations, saying that these allegations that claim that the ECRL will squeeze out local participation. So now that they say it's only going to be 30% of workers that will be foreign workers from China and from other Asian countries, the other 70%, they will be Malaysians. Is that kind of reassurance enough for, you know, to address what the NST's front page this morning calls anti-China sentiments?
Well, you know, there's, of course, the other thing that you need to really look at the numbers very closely. 70% of which segment of the workforce?
Oh, what type of jobs you mean?
That's right. Oh. So, you know, is it the engineers? Are we talking about the manual side of it in terms of the hard labor? It's unclear at this point in time where that 70-30% split is, especially when one of the arguments for this high level of Chinese participation in terms of the workforce was a question of language accessibility. So and that, again, you know, unclear as to at which part of the, you know, the workforce these people are going to be participating.
You know, when I spoke to the Malay Contractors Association Malaysia on the Breakfast Grill recently, and one of the things that they said, you know, because I asked them, of course, about these types of high impact projects, how it's going to impact the kind of Bumiputra contractors in terms of their projects and order books, they said that, well, what they're trying to do now is to train their workers to speak Mandarin. So that they can get a share of this pie, because clearly the language barrier is language accessibility is a key concern. If you're going to hire a Chinese company to build the ECRL, then you must be able to communicate. If you want to win that project, you better speak Mandarin.
But also, I mean, the flip side is that if you want to tender a project or you're pitching for a project in a foreign country, perhaps the onus is on you to understand and be able to use the language in that home country.
But
right?
if you have leverage, if you have, you know, you've made the terms for financing, you know, attractive, so maybe you might not have the, I guess, the need to necessarily bend to the host country's demands.
Yeah, and I think the equipment, I think I remember reading in the news that they're saying that they've applied to recruit Chinese workers because equipment and machinery to be used are of China's technology, which uses a Mandarin, and, you know, for the operating systems and manuals. But I mean, Malaysians can read Mandarin. You know, there are Malaysians. I mean, a lot of them. A lot of them are picking up Mandarin, and yeah.
The question is whether they want to take these jobs up. And we just had some elaboration on the kinds of jobs that are available there in administration, in engineering, construction, management, commercial, and contract laboratory work as well. So it's a range of jobs. I guess the question is whether Malaysians will be attracted to the jobs and what kind of wages are going to be on offer.
But you can't have it both ways, right? You can't say, no, I don't want there to be foreign labour. There must be local participation. And at the same time say, well, I don't want those jobs.
Yeah. The question is, what kind of flexibility is the government of the day going to bring to these numbers, the 30-70% divide? We'll have to wait to see how this all pans out. We're coming up to the top of the hour. We'll be back after the bulletin with the Breakfast Grill. This morning, our guest is David Fike, CEO of Zurich General Insurance Malaysia. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Fuel your business drive with a Volvo S90 T8 twin engine. So cost efficient, it makes good business sense. Volvo, made by Sweden.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.